Welcome to Kicking It with Raphael. My name is Mark Serber, alongside my co-host from the Shin Guardian and Oxford United, Zach Goldman. Well, Raphael Geller, still on vacation, and Zach, he's probably lying on some pristine beach somewhere. We don't know, but we're happy to fill in for him.
I feel really bad for him.
Yeah, exactly. Me too. Although you're in England, so I wouldn't complain too much. I mean, you're taking in a ton of football matches. In fact, and we'll get to this in a second, is that the championship has already started in the lower leagues too, so you've taken in a lot of matches before the Premier League's even begun.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's been a tremendous summer. First with all the friendlies we've had, and then starting the season really well. Last weekend, my club went down to Portsmouth, so got to visit the historic Fratton Park, and we picked up a 4-1 victory, so that was excellent. And then last night, the Carling Cup actually got underway. Or sorry, excuse me, the Capital One Cup. I would get in very serious trouble if anyone heard that. The Capital One Cup got underway. We were unfortunately victims at the Valley in Charlton. We lost 4-0, but an excellent day out, had a big crowd, and really enjoyed playing a team from the championship. It's not every day that we get to do that, so it's really special. But yeah, the football's already in full swing here, so it's really exciting for everyone to get to sink their teeth back into it, for those of us who don't get to watch things like MLS from across the pond.
And for all those Premier League fans, do they take in the lower league football before just because they're itching and shaking just to watch some kind of football before the season gets underway?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people do. Typically, you know, a lot of people live closer to a lower league club than a Premier League club, and as a result, they kind of they harbor support for both clubs, and I think it's certainly a sustainable process of fandom to split your loyalties like that, because the likelihood that those two clubs are going to play each other is slim to none most years. So yeah, I mean, we've had a lot of fans of other clubs come to Oxford, and I know, especially in London, which is where I'm currently based, there's a ton of people who are itching and waiting to see Spurs and Arsenal and Chelsea get underway, and you know, they'll take in clubs like Brentford and Barnet and Welling and all these clubs further down the ladder that might already be kicking on, because competitive football at any level is really gonna it's something special, and it's much better to see that than a friendly. I think everyone acknowledges here.
Well, the one thing that isn't friendly is definitely the transfer season. If anything, it's just silly and ridiculous, especially on all those back pages. But we did read that Luis Suarez has asked to leave Anfield. Give us your take on that.
Yeah, I mean, it is silly season. You're right on the money. I abhor transfer season. There's a tiny part of me that likes it at the beginning. A tiny part of me that likes to see how managers retool their squads, how they make sensible buys, how they, find holes and are able to plug them, but it's been anything but the summer, and I think things like Gareth Bale and Luis Suarez, they both typify kind of the absurdity of the modern-day transfer, and with Luis Suarez, I mean, he's called on the club, obviously, to let him leave Anfield, and that in many ways has been a long time coming. I completely understand it. I would have thought he'd be more into engineering a move outside of England, as I think most people were, because so much of his trials and tribulations here have stemmed from a rocky relationship with the press and with opposing fans. And I really don't think that a lot of clubs would welcome him into the fray, you know, both institutionally and on a supporter-wide level. And I can't imagine, people like clubs like Arsenal, I can't imagine any Gooners being that excited to have him aboard, especially if they break their transfer record twice over to get him there. But what do you think? I mean, because it is a really unique summer in many ways to have the biggest transfer targets be coming out of England.
The thing about Luis Suarez is I can't imagine that Liverpool would want to let him go to Arsenal. I think that they would want him to go to another country simply because they don't want him to go to a title contender, a team that they're going to be fighting for the top four with. So for them to let them go to Arsenal, I think, would be a huge mistake on Liverpool's part. I think if they want him to go to Real Madrid, they want him to go to another country, that's completely fine. Obviously, they would like him to stay, but if he has to go, I say don't let him go somewhere in England where he can hurt you on Sundays. And so that's the thing that's interesting to me, is if Arsenal are the team that does get him, then I say that's Liverpool's mistake more than anything. And of course, Arsenal, I don't know whether fans would be happy to see him or happy that they would break the kind of record on him. I think they're just kind of happy that they're going to actually spend that money on somebody that they believe that can help them out. And the one thing is that Absolutely. He is a known quantity in England, and he can start scoring goals right away, kind of like a Van Persie, where you had Podolski, you had Giroud, all of them needed to settle in, and you have Gervinho going to Roma now, who put himself in great positions, but then couldn't hit water from a boat once he was there. So he's going to be a player who can settle in right away. The thing is, why let him go to a title contender? And that's the biggest thing for me.
Absolutely. And you know, clubs are always weighing how highly to prize a transfer fee versus, you know, if we let him go to the highest bidder and the highest bidder happens to hurt us during the year, well, doesn't that, you know, in some ways negate the high fee that we accepted? I think we saw that in many ways with Robin Van Persie. I mean, even though Arsenal arguably weren't pushed any further down the table as a result of that, they certainly had offers from abroad. I mean, I think Juve at the beginning of that summer was targeted as, you know, the prime destination for him. There were rumblings of Spanish teams putting in for him. And, you know, you really wonder if Liverpool and Arsenal are really battling for the same spots. I mean, some would argue that you know, maybe Liverpool are more of a Europa League contender rather than a Champions League contender, but I really don't think so when you look sort of at that roster top to bottom. And you also look at how they've spent their money arguably so unwisely, and to have another chance at having that transfer kitty available for you, you know, maybe in the mid-season when you can really make a push in that winter window, it's an enticing thing. So in some ways I understand wanting to go to the highest bidder, but as you point out, there would be more preferable destinations than Arsenal in their book, for sure.
Well, speaking of clubs that usually get the job done in the transfer window, unlike Arsenal, but it seems like Manchester United are still stagnant, and that's one of the things that they promise us here is we're going to buy, and we're going to buy big, and so far we haven't heard anything. No Baines, no Fellaini, they didn't trigger his £22 million release clause. What's going on at Manchester United, and do you see them making a move before September 2nd?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. No, I don't think anyone really knows what to expect because it's now the Moyes era, and I don't think this happens under Fergie, not even close. I think for me, the biggest thing is the transfers have to really be at the service of what they already have in the team. I think everyone is very, very high on Shinji Kagawa, but they need Shinji Kagawa to play in spots where he'll be effective, which is as close to that number 10 role as they can get. And that's why I think Fellaini makes so much sense. You have a versatile center midfielder who can really play box to box. He can play as a midfield anchor, which I think is probably his better spot, especially for United. If you were to go there, he's a wonderfully useful player to have in terms of getting the best out of other players who might not then have to focus on defensive commitment. So a player like Shinji Kagawa is free to create. He's free to, you know, be hazardous to the opposing defenses by really moving in and out of spots and forcing them to make decisions on who's going to pick him up between the center halves and things like that. It would be a wonderful buy, and I can't fathom why someone like Moyes hasn't triggered, a response from Everton, because he's, you know, been Fellaini's manager for so long, and he knows him inside and out, and you'd think it would be a really simple move to, you know, have a player you're familiar with, a player who's so highly prized, and a player who fits into your squad so well. But it's so hard to tell if that's even on their agenda. I think so much was geared towards, you know, trying to entice Cesc Fabregas over. And while that's an interesting move, you know, for something like 40 million or whatever the figure was that they were floating, you wonder if, you know, you can cut that in half and get a Fellaini who maybe fits into your team better. If, you know, he might not be the same caliber player all the way around, but, you know, which one of these makes more sense? And I think Fellaini makes way more sense for them. The other thing is kind of looking at something like where Wayne Rooney goes, or if Wayne Rooney goes, rather. And, you know, the likelihood that someone picks him up in the winter window, I don't think that's very likely just given the nature of what we know about the English transfer season. I mean, I think Fernando Torres being the counterpoint to that, but that was silly amounts of money being thrown around from within England, and I'm not sure you're likely to see that in this window. In the next window. So I think time's running out on both players coming into United and players flowing out. And you've done a lot of the Manchester United preseason matches. What have you seen? Have you seen this as a team that can compete? Is this a team that can win the title? Is it too early to say?
I think this is a team that can compete. They definitely have a lot of talented youngsters who are going to come up, but they're going to need some time. I mean, Wilfried Zaha has looked sensational, but it's going to be a different thing week in and week out against the best players in the Premier League. You have a guy named Adnan Januzaj, an 18-year-old Belgian who is just an incredible talent, but once again, going to be very tough for him. Jesse Lingard as well impressed the 20-year-old who was on loan at Leicester last season, but it's not going to be the same. They're not going to have that kind of consistency that the top players are going to have through 38 games. So do United have an 11 that can compete? That's even without these guys, yes. But do they have the depth to go on and win the title this year the way that Chelsea does? No, I don't think so. So I think that they have to make some buys, and they have to make them now. I think their biggest mistake in going after, it seemed like going after Cesc, was they didn't have a plan B and a plan C. And that's something that a lot of teams usually have, and they never triggered it while they were waiting for Cesc in what to me always seemed like a lost cause, because it didn't seem like Cesc ever really wanted to leave Barcelona, let alone the fact that there's a lot of different positions that they need him to play at Barcelona right now, and he still has the chance of being the successor to play in that creative role that he's always craved. But for now, Zach, we know that you're living in London, but you're still on Twitter as @thatdamnyank. So we're going to ask you some questions now about the MLS and the fact that we're going to talk about what nobody else has talked about on any other show this last week, and that's Clint Dempsey. And I want to get your take on Clint Dempsey. And to me, what was so surprising is not the move back to MLS, but just the fact that this was a player primed to play in the Champions League. His dream was to play in the Champions League, and now that's seemingly over. And I want to get your thoughts on that. And the second thing is, he did this without asking Jurgen Klinsmann. And Jurgen Klinsmann, I think his view might have changed after seeing how well his MLS squad did in the Gold Cup. But the bottom line is, he wants his top players playing in the Champions League. And the one player he said was one of the best players he ever worked with now is not going to do that. He can't be happy. What are your thoughts on the transfer overall and on the other things I said in my very long-winded question?
No, it was a great question, very panoptic, and I think you sort of hit everything. I think I've gone through sort of a range of different feelings with regards to the transfer, and part of the reason for that was because the speculation was, you know, in the truest sense, speculative. We didn't know so much about the transfer coming into the actual announcement. I think the figures were floated and certain sources were floated, but we really didn't know what to make of it. It just sort of unraveled in the craziest, evening news bulletin type fashion. And as it unraveled, it started to make more and more sense. And I think part of that was due to some of the great things that I read on the Shin Guardian, which is one of the website that I often write for. We had an article by Jason Lemire who pointed out the idea that this is a move that could be about leadership. You know, Clint Dempsey's going into the World Cup next summer, potentially as the captain of the U.S. men's national team, and he really hasn't been in a leadership role before. That's a great point, and it's something that'll allow him to hone his skills. But I think sort of the way I'd parse out my feelings towards this is that there are massive pros and massive cons, but by and large, it's you have to pick from those and see what's more important to Clint Dempsey as a player right now. And I think on balance, it actually makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, in terms of Major League Soccer, a lot of people here in England don't rate it, and the move didn't garner nearly the media firestorm that it garnered in the U.S., but at the same time, people saw it as a step down, and one would expect that. In the U.S., there was sort of a counterculture kind of backlash that was very proud of the move back home, and understandably so, but also in the process may have slightly overstepped MLS's reputation, maybe been slightly hyperbolic about the competition that Clint Dempsey will face and what it could provide to his game in a physical and in a tactical sense. I think it really is in some ways a move about comfort. I think we've long excused Landon Donovan for not playing at the highest level he may have been able to play at, in order to develop other sides of him. Some of those sides being, you know, metaphysical things, you know, feeling spiritually at peace with himself as a footballer, feeling like he's comfortable playing at a certain level, and that allows him to elevate himself when he gets to a certain stage. I get that, and I think it's about time that we accord that same respect and that same rationale to Clint Dempsey. The reality is that he's getting paid a lot of money to go back home and to play on a team where he's going to be a leader and in a league where he is going to be the number one face of the league. I don't think there's any doubt about that, that Clint Dempsey is now the poster child for MLS as it stands right here. I think it's huge that he will be fresh for the World Cup. I think our players are at peak physical condition going into the World Cup every summer because they're not battered and bruised from a full season of, you know, 50, 60 games in Europe. And that's going to be huge. I think where this move does let you down a bit is I do think that there's more to his game that he has not developed yet. A lot of people say that, okay, he's, you know, he's in his 30s, your game stops developing then. I don't think that's true at all. And I think it's especially not true because you learn to do things with your limited, you know, your physical limitations that are starting to seep into your game. With Clint, that's huge because so much of his game is built around positioning and about, you know, using his movement intelligently up top. I think so much of Gareth Bale's success last year, whether or not the English like to admit it, is linked to how Clint Dempsey was able to draw defenders away from the ball, to how he's able to check into the, you know, maybe not the final ball, but the ball before that, and to really encourage, you know, really fast-paced link-up play up top. With the U.S., maybe those aren't the prime concerns. He's probably much more of a pure finisher with us. He's the guy we're looking to stick the ball in the back of the net, but nevertheless, it's important that he has some dynamic movement that frees up people like Jozy Altidore, people like Landon Donovan. And I'm not sure you get that by playing every week in MLS, just in that he can get away with doing a lot less. He's going to have more space on the ball. He's going to be in a bit of a rough and tumble league, but when he's in the box, he's probably going to be a lot more physically dominant playing against a lot of MLS central defenders than a lot of Premiership central defenders or Europa League central defenders. And that's important. How important is it? I don't know. I think you have to really weigh these things back and forth. But I think on balance, it's a good move for him at this point in time, and it's certainly good for the league. I mean, this is the most massive transfer in league history, not counting Beckham because it was a signing. But in terms of paying the transfer fee, that's huge for MLS to have done, and it sets a precedent that they're looking to do this. I mean, I think this could even be the start of an American-designated player slot, which would be absolutely tremendous for this league to have. We talk so much about building young American talent and nurturing it to a point where it can go abroad, but the opposite is just as true. It's about having a league where it's not a step down to come back fiscally or competitively. It's about creating a league where we can be, you know, proud to welcome our players home as a legitimate move forward in their career instead of a place to retire and get paid. So yeah, sorry, my answer was just as long-winded as your question, but I have one for you now. I mean, like, in terms of Clint Dempsey's move, do you see it as a step down, a step up, especially given its timing with the World Cup coming up?
I don't see it as necessarily a step down. I'm just sad because he's a player I wanted to see in the Champions League personally. Sure. I'm not speaking for Jurgen Klinsmann. This is just my own feelings about it. It'd be interesting to see. We talk about him being fresh for the World Cup, but I heard that one of the clauses in his contract might be the ability to go on loan in January or February and play with a top European club in order to be ready for the World Cup. So it'll be interesting to see if he does that. But for now, you talked about an American DP slot, and coming up next, we actually have Adam Serrano, the LA Galaxy insider, to talk about the fact that the LA Galaxy are actually looking to make one of their Americans a designated player. And Zach, you know that you and I could talk football for hours. We usually do, but we need to keep this short for our listeners. So we're going to let you go. Thank you so much for your time. It's always such a pleasure to talk to you. And we'll do it again, same time next week. But coming up right now on the phone is Adam Serrano of the LA Galaxy. And we'll hear what he has to say about a possible DP slot for one of the U.S. men's national team.
Great. Thanks, Mark.
So we're joined now by LA Galaxy insider Adam Serrano, who's in Miami right now as LA is getting ready to face off against AC Milan. You can follow him on Twitter at LA Galaxy Insider. And the reason I bring up your Twitter handle first is because one of the first tweets I read from you after LA shocked Juventus was that somebody in the press room actually asked Antonio Conte if he was ashamed. Was that true? And what was the Juventus coach's response?
It was true. He did ask, Italian journalist did ask the head coach of Juventus if he was ashamed at the result. You know, 3-1 is quite a loss. And, you know, it could have been even bigger. But I think that he kind of responded, you know, the team is in preseason. And they haven't been playing well at all this preseason. They looked very poor against Everton, and they lost that game on penalties, but they probably should have lost it straight out. So, you know, he was just kind of upset with his team, but admitted that, you know, maybe they have to go back to the drawing board and just reevaluate themselves before they play in the Super Cup game against Lazio next weekend.
And I have a list of questions for you that I'd prepared, but we're going to have to kind of deviate here because it seems like yesterday was a crazy day at the StubHub Center. So before we get back to that shock victory over Juventus, there was stuff going on with Omar Gonzalez and also talk that Carlo Cudicini's days as the number one keeper may be numbered. Tell us about what was going on yesterday that made everything so crazy.
Report came out, you know, fantastically written article by Grant Wall about how the deal for Clint Dempsey went down with him joining Seattle Sounders FC. And in that article, he dropped a little bit of a nugget saying that the Galaxy dropped out of the race for the Texan because they were interested in bringing back Omar Gonzalez back as the team's third designated player. You know, it's a much bullyhooed spot, and you've had many players linked to that at the moment. But, you know, that's an interesting development. And when I reached out to the team said that, you know, they are interested in Omar Gonzalez and talks are ongoing. And that seems to show that things are kind of moving along for him. And, you know, I don't think it's that bad of an idea. Personally, I think that it would be an interesting move for LA. They'd be able to keep one of their key players and really lock him down for an extended period of time and also give him the raise that I think he truly deserves. So it'd be an interesting move. And then also you have the signing of new Panamanian goalkeeper Jaime Pinedo. You know, he had a fantastic Gold Cup when he won the Golden Glove for Panama. So, you know, he's going to be in contention for a spot. You know, LA has a lot of games coming up, MLS regular season and the start of the CONCACAF Champions League, and I expect him to see some time there. But, you know, a lot's being made about whether this is the end of Carlo Cudicini. I don't think Bruce Arena is going to be so hasty with that. You know, he's going to try to see if he can get something out of this young Panamanian goalkeeper and see if this might push a guy like Omar. A guy like Carlo Cudicini, and get him to do a little bit better. You know, he's actually done fairly well over the past month. You know, the Galaxy are not conceding many chances, but this season they just seem to be snake bit and conceding a little bit early on or late in games. So that's a reoccurring problem. Really not one that's been Cudicini's fault most of the time, but it'll be interesting to see what happens right there. But I can't say, in my opinion, I really think that Cudicini's days are truly done just about yet.
So Brian Perk and Brian Rowe have both been great goalkeepers when called upon. Which one of them is going to suffer the consequences of a new keeper coming in?
You know, I think that Rowe is currently, you know, he was the number two. Brian Perk is currently dealing with some injury issues, and that's kind of holding him back a little bit. He's been very unlucky this season. he's dealt with a concussion and then he suffered another injury and hasn't trained since the team's trip to Portland last month. So that's a problem for him. You know, I think in the end, since Roe is healthy, the games might come out of Roe's pocket. So I think that's a little bit of an issue there. So, I mean, it's still an ongoing process, and I think that a guy like Bruce Arena is willing to be flexible and really pick the best person available. So I think I wouldn't say that we're out of the woods yet with this thing with the Galaxy. They're going to go to a new goalkeeper. I think Cudicini will definitely see time. I think he'll probably play against Dallas, but we'll see. It'll be an interesting 12 MLS games left in the season.
Well, still, before even you have MLS, you have AC Milan coming up. And let's get back to that Juventus match. Obviously, the fact, like you said, Juventus wasn't playing very well. And then you also had Keane returning for the first time since that hip flexor injury on June 15th. But other than that, what was the major difference between the Juve match and the Real Madrid match that allowed the LA Galaxy to be so dominant and beat such a powerhouse?
I'll tell you this. It's very, very simple. Against Juventus, the LA Galaxy were able to call upon Omar Gonzalez, Robbie Keane, and Landon Donovan. They're three best players. And when you have those kinds of guys, things happen. Things connect a little bit faster. You know, the team didn't give a poor account of themselves against Madrid, but the score line was actually not that bad for them, and I think that actually ends up catapulting them into the third place game, in fact. So they gave that fair account of themselves, but when you have those three players, things just come a little bit easier. Those are guys that can make plays for you and make plenty of them, and that's against the top and best some of the best competition in the world. So, I mean, having them, it made all the difference.
And obviously, this is just a friendly match, and Bruce Arena kept reiterating that, but behind the scenes, what does it mean to those guys to beat such a famous club?
Yeah, I mean, it is a big deal. I think what they want is they want to have a little bit of a push going into Dallas. You know, that's the goal, you know, in front of the camera, behind the camera, you know, in the locker room, outside the locker room. That's the goal for them. They know that beating Dallas is more important than if they were to even win the Guinness International Champions Cup. So they know that they have to get a little bit of a push. And generally speaking, the Galaxy tend to get a little bit of a push when they finish up these international tournaments because they get a chance to test themselves against new competition. They get a shot to just see some of the best players in the world play on a real close setting and maybe, you know, take a couple things from them. Why this player X makes a move? Why a guy like Mario Balotelli moves the way he does? You know, why Andrea Pirlo takes a shot, he looks in a certain way. And I think that's one of the main things you can gain from playing in these types of tournaments. And I think that's one of the reasons, aside from, you know, the economic factors, that the Galaxy are so interested in playing these types of matches.
Now we're talking to the LA Galaxy insider Adam Serrano, and you can check out his work at lagalaxy.com. And one of the reasons I say that is, first of all, tremendous work on that website as well as other places. But you talked about one of your articles was that about these young players who don't really get to play so much in MLS and they're getting a chance to play against these big clubs. Which of these players got the most playing time and who gave the best account of themselves coming off from what is essentially the reserve teams, which really only play once or twice a month until you get into these tournaments?
Well, you know, this is really important for a guy like Jose Villarreal. You know, he's been starting, but now with Donovan back, with Keane back, you know, I expect his role to maybe diminish in terms of regular season play a little bit. But, you know, he had that fantastic goal against Real Madrid. It was one of the great moments. You know, it even led the Real Madrid website to call him the Galaxy's best player on the field. So that's quite an account of himself. You know, I think that you saw some good things from Brian Rowe. You know, he got some minutes and was able to perform fairly well. You know, I also thought that a guy like a Rafael Garcia, you know, he did well in the midfield, partnering along with Pablo Mascherini and really provided a settling and calming presence for LA, even into the second half. So I think those are guys you need to watch. Also, I want to see some more going forward. So I think guys like a Chandler Hoffman or a Charlie Rugg have to learn from these types of experiences. So it'll be interesting to see if they can put this into practice. You know, they don't have another reserve game until September, so that's a real problem, but we'll see what actually comes to it.
And turning back to the MLS, not the best in June, going 1-3-1, and then in July a little bit better, 3-2. Part of that was, though, the players missing through the Gold Cup and injury. What do they have to do going forward to not only keep themselves in these playoff spots, but to climb up the table?
They got to stay healthy. You know, that's key. This team has to stay healthy. When they have their full accompaniment of stars out there, you know, I would take them over about any team in MLS, and I think they would feel that way. They'd feel like they could beat any team in MLS. So I think that if this team can stay healthy, I think what I've been mentioning, you know, several times now is that these exhibition games can provide a little bit of push, and I think this team needed that. You know, they were kind of looking a little down because they had had so many late goal problems, and that kind of caused them to get a little bit down in the dumps. But, you know, after a tournament like this, after an experience like this where they, you know, acquitted themselves very well and reached the third place game, I'll tell you this, there are plenty of banners in Miami right now for this Guinness International Champions Cup. None of them are of the LA Galaxy because, you know, they just didn't think they could reach that Sunday, that Wednesday game. So they know they've done well. They know they've given a fair account of themselves. Now all they have to do is apply that and really get a little bit of a push and just stay healthy and stay on the ball, because if they do, they're going to be a big contender for another championship.
And the last question we have for you, because we know that you're at the games right now, is that we all know about Robbie Rodgers, what a great story it is, but judging on what's happened on the field just alone in both LA and Chicago, are the Galaxy and the fans happy to have Rodgers, or are they missing Mike McGee, considering that it seems like he was Mr. Clutch for the Galaxy and now he's Mr. Clutch for Chicago?
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's a lot of factors when you take that in. Of course, you're going to miss a guy like Mike McGee, who is clearly having the best season of his career right now. But for the Galaxy, it is, and they knew it was kind of an investment. They knew that they were going to put some time into Rodgers, wait for him to get fit, wait for him to get better, and then they'd start to see the payoff. They'd start to see, hopefully, that U.S. international, that player that was able to play for a team like Leeds United. So, I mean, it's kind of a wait-and-see proposition for them. They know that. They know that Rodgers is going to have to produce. And actually, I think in these Guinness Championship games, he's actually done fairly well. And he started to show that flash. He started to make the good runs, make the crosses that you wanted to see. So I think it's a wait and see there. Yes, you know, you can't put down anything Mike McGee has done with Chicago. It's been fantastic. But we have to wait and see for Robbie Rodgers, I think.
Well, Adam Serrano, you can follow him on Twitter at LA Galaxy Insider. Also read his articles at LAGalaxy.com. He's one of the best in the business, and it was an absolute pleasure to have you on. And we know that you're at the International Champions Cup right now, and you're talking to us in the middle of a game, so we really, really appreciate you coming on during this time. And it's such a pleasure speaking with you, and best of luck to the Galaxy against AC Milan. Do you think that they can pull off another upset against an Italian team where they've been undefeated against teams in Serie A?
It's going to be a fun game, that's for sure. I'm looking forward to seeing guys like Balotelli, Alshawi. You know, it'll be a real fun contest. Keane was probably going to go about 70 minutes, so it'll be an exciting game.
All right, well, Adam, once again, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciated having you on, and enjoy your time in Miami.
Thank you so much, Mark. It's a real pleasure.
Well, it's time now to shift our focus from the MLS to Spain's La Liga, and we're very excited to be joined by beIN Sports' Phil Schoen. And Phil, first of all, thank you so much for taking the time to join us here on Kicking It with Rafael.
Oh, no problem. I wish Rafael could be here, but hopefully we'll be able to entertain him.
Yeah, he's taken a very well-deserved vacation, but I know he's listening in, and he's very excited that you're a guest on our show, and so of course, want to talk what your bread and butter is, and that is La Liga. And it seems to me that it's going to be another year where it's Real Madrid versus Barcelona for the title. and the first race is always in the transfer market. And so far with Neymar, Barca have to be the clear winners, right?
To a point, however, you again follow into the Barcelona question is they're buying, but are they buying what they need? And if you listen to some of the rumors, it looks like they're finally going to try and make another push to get David Luiz. I know that there's a very good center back at Newell's that Tata Martino loves in Vergini. Hopefully he'll come over. But as far as Barcelona, I think we knew they could score. The question is, a year further on and with a few less defenders, are they going to be able to keep other teams from scoring? So I don't think we're quite done yet with the transfer window, and this might go down to the wire depending upon how much Jose Mourinho wants to help Barcelona in that effort. But then again, you could say maybe he wants to put a needle into Real Madrid at the same point, and we'll find out how that one works. Regardless, I think what we're seeing under Martino, at least at the outset, is a little bit more of what Pep Guardiola was doing, maybe than Tito was last year. And it's still going to take a few weeks, I think, to get a true view, and probably a few months to find out how it goes over in the dressing room.
Are they also trying to do anything to replace Thiago Alcantara as well?
To a point, but they already have that pipeline built in. And you have to remember, they also had a certain player named Cesc Fabregas, who, even though he played so many games and so many minutes right up there at the top in both categories with Barcelona last year, found it hard to find a home. He would either be at that false nine or perhaps in the Iniesta spot, perhaps in the Xavi spot. I think that this year we're not going to see him as much in the false nine since Neymar is around. But we might see, because Thiago is not, a little bit more of him in the midfield sharing that Xavi and Iniesta spot. And you have to remember, Alex Song did not have the greatest of first years, so you might even see Cesc in that natural position that Barcelona brought him up to be, is stepping in for Sergi Busquets. So it's not going to be that playmaker role. It's not going to be that central focal point role that that many are saying that Fabregas wants, like he had at Arsenal. But he's definitely going to be a big part of the Barcelona equation.
And so there's definitely no way that he's going to head to Manchester United. It seems that they've already made that clear, but Fabregas will be happy to stay and take this role, even though it's not what he envisioned when he first left for Barcelona?
Well, I think when he got off the plane and they handed him a trophy, something he hadn't seen for a while at Arsenal, he probably felt right. But no, I think that from what we're hearing from Barcelona camp, from some of his teammates, that Fabregas is going nowhere. I don't know if we're going to see how happy that is, that makes him. For a while, until he perhaps finds his rhythm. They also have another kid named Sergio Roberto, who's probably more the Iniesta type than the Xavi type, like Thiago was. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him. We've seen Jonathan Dos Santos, who was rumored to be leaving, but playing a pretty key role in the preseason. So there's younger guys, but I have a feeling at least at that that playmaker position, they cannot afford to let Cesc leave. And I think that the fact that they want him and that they need him is going to go a long way towards making him happy.
So how excited are you to see Neymar and Messi play together? And do you believe it can work? It seems like right now Neymar's saying all the right things about succeeding to Messi and how he's just going to be part of the team. But it seems like if Messi hits a goal drought, it's going to be up to Neymar to step up and fill that void.
I would agree, and it is going to be very interesting to see how Neymar reacts. At this point, he's saying all the right things. He's playing the right way. And as you point out, though, what happens if come March or April, with Messi in a good position, Neymar decides to take the shot himself? Even if he scores, it'll be interesting to find out what Messi's reaction is. But if he doesn't, we've already seen what Messi can do. I mean, he barked at David Villa, to the point where Villa was kind of shipped off to Siberia for a month, and now even is out of Barcelona. So over the years, Messi has taken more and more control of the reins, and it's without a doubt his team. I think that Neymar is well aware of that, but when we've seen him at Santos, where he's the number one, and especially over this past year with Brazil and Santos, what he is able to do. He's going to have to keep that under wraps a bit, and it'll be interesting to find out what happens when he decides to untie the bows and let a little show off how Messi deals with that, and then how he deals with a Messi reaction.
And so many people said that one of the things they were worried about is that Neymar dribbled too much, but it seemed to me that in the Confederations Cup, he showed that he was able to pass as well, and that looks like something that's going to bode well for Barcelona. Neymar seems to have shown that in his first few preseason games, that even though there's been times he's run at players when he shouldn't, he also seems to be picking out the right pass at the right moment.
Well, absolutely, and it's strange because I can't pick the specific point, but since Scolatti has taken over, and probably right around the turn of the new year, something changed. And it seemed like Neymar, who was always trying to be the showman, the next Ronaldinho, kind of modified that a bit. He still puts on the show. He still has the peacock feathers puffed out. But he realizes the responsibility. He realizes that in the end, the victory is what matters. And I think we've seen him mature into more of a team player, more of a leader. And I think that year at Barcelona is only going to strengthen that, and I think Brazil's going to benefit. I think Neymar's going to benefit. So this is not the Neymar that was the teenager, that was the highlight of the YouTube clips. He's still going to be there, but I think that he's a little bit more self-confident and a little bit more willing to do what it takes.
Well, over to Madrid now. Do you believe that Madrid can lend Bale? Do you think they'll even get Suarez? And do you also see Contral and possibly Morata going the other way?
I think they will get Bale, just because from a Tottenham perspective, even if he is an icon, and even if the fans might not like to see him go, I think we're at that astronomical figure where it's hard to say no. And Daniel Levy is a salesman, which, while it might make for difficult negotiation, normally ends up resulting in a sale. So if he goes, it won't be easy. It won't be cheap for Real Madrid. And it'll be interesting to see how that plays. Talk about Neymar and Messi. I think you're probably looking at two players that are in their prime, in Ronaldo and Bale. So there's going to be some interesting discussions there as well. I think the fact that Carlo Ancelotti's there probably means there'll be less fireworks than there might have been last year. But I would be very surprised, because what happens if Bale gets hurt? And then all of a sudden that opportunity is gone for Spurs. What happens if he just falls back to merely being very good as opposed to world-class? And that's something that Messi and Ronaldo have done for half a decade, be up at that level. He's basically done it for 1 year, year and a half. So it'll be interesting if he can duplicate that at Real Madrid and be worth the money. But I think that if Spurs doesn't sell it, it could be something they regret. Now, on the other side, I know there's been some talk about Di Maria, who I think would probably be a better fit. I know that they like the youngster Morata. And Contral, obviously, they do need a little bit of help on that point, too. So I think that they'd prefer to have the money. But as this drags on closer and closer to the end of the transfer window, there's only so much and so many that you can spend that money on. So if it does drag on much longer, maybe a player or two comes back. But I think Levy also would kind of like to have that world record transfer to pin on his door. So find out how things play out. But I do think that a deal gets done. As far as Luis Suarez, I'd be a bit surprised. But if they can get the bail done quickly enough, it would be a way for Florentino Perez to say, sure, you got Neymar, but we got Bale and Suarez. So there's always that bit of bragging that goes on between Real and Barcelona. And it could be Arsenal just left on the outside with that, all that supposed money still in their hand and no one to give it to.
So once the ball is finally kicked in La Liga, after we see who wins in the transfer market, who do you see winning the league? Once again, it's going to be a two-horse race. Is it going to be Real Madrid or is it going to be Barcelona, in your opinion?
It's going to be one of the two. It's tough because I really want to see a little bit more of Martino. I know we have the game on BN Sport against Thailand on Wednesday. It's obviously not going to be quite the same as facing Real, but Thailand gave Liverpool a bit of a battle, and it's a different situation, another week of working with Martino. So I still won't see how that one plays out, but at the same point, you have Real under Ancelotti, and if they do get Bale and it doesn't quite work out well in the dressing room with Ronaldo, my heart and brain both tell me it'll be Real, not by a lot, but enough because of Ancelotti's calming influence. However, I think that Martino could turn out to be almost a perfect fit for Barcelona. So if they could maybe get stay healthy on the back line and maybe shore up with one or two center backs, that there's a very good chance that they could challenge and make it very, very tight. But at this particular point, I think the edge probably goes back to Real.
Wow, very interesting, especially considering the fashion in which Barcelona won it last year and the fact that it is Barcelona who did land Neymar, and yet it's still Real who you feel is going to win the title. Moving on now, sadly, to what we say is now the rest of La Liga. Speaking about Valencia, they've lost Soldado. How big of a blow is it for them, and how have Valencia looked to you during the International Champions Cups? Which players have stood out? It seems like Miroslav Dujic says his side can still achieve great things. Do you believe him? Who will pick up the goal scoring slack for Valencia now that Soldado is gone? Right now you just have Jonas and Pablo Alcázar as the lone strikers, and Soldado last year had 24 league goals. So is it just going to be the likes of Benega, the likes of Jonas who pick up the goal scoring slack, or is Valencia going to struggle without that top striker?
I think the answer is yes, they will struggle. And from a Soldado perspective, you have to remember over the last 3 years, only Messi and Ronaldo have scored more in La Liga. He's not exactly flashy. He's not smooth, but he was effective. I think that they will spend some of that money, a little bit more of it. I love Alcácer, but I don't think he's quite ready. Maybe by next year. Jonas is a very good second forward, but they do need to get that big man up front. So I still think that they will challenge for Europe, but I'd be surprised if they challenge for a Champions League this year.
And another team that's won a couple UEFA Cup titles and has always seemed to be challenging for Europe, although had a rough season last year, is Sevilla. Now they've lost Negredo, they've lost Campana, and they've lost Jesus Navas. All are gone. Will Sevilla be able to compete this season?
Well, you have to remember that this was a team that was struggling in the bottom half and then fought back, I guess, come relatively close towards those top teams in the table. They do have some talent there, but you're right. I think that Navas and Negredo are huge losses. Negredo might have been the best pure striker, not named Ronaldo or Messi, in Europe, and I think he's going to be quite popular at Manchester City. It's interesting because a lot of the strikers are leaving La Liga. It's not even just the recycling. You're seeing a couple of players move around like Isco, but the money that is vacuumed away inside the league and now the money that's emerging, especially from England and to a lesser point Italy, is making things very difficult. So again, Sevilla is one of those teams that I think might be lucky, bar a good investment or maybe an amazing season from Alcácer. I think we'd be really lucky to hit the top half of the table.
Well, you talked about it. There seems to be that exodus from Spanish football. In fact, over 25 players have left this summer, especially for England. English teams have spent 107 million euros on 11 different Spanish players. Obviously, it all started with Michu impressing so well at Swansea City. But what do you attribute this to, the fact that so many Spanish players are leaving La Liga? And also, is that going to hurt the national team, where you had the majority of players playing in Spain, plus that sprinkling of a few players whose game had been hardened in the Premiership?
I think you could even go back a couple of years to Mata, and before that to David Silva. The funny thing is, it's when Silva went over and all of a sudden people took a look and realized that, hey, wow, he could play, and you don't have to be 6'3" and 200 pounds to play this game. So I think that Silva has kind of opened the door, and now you're seeing guys that Negredo, who is a physical specimen, is so talented, just to step in. So from a Spain national team perspective, there will be some adjustment, but they will be playing some very good football and probably toughening themselves up for what can tend to be physical tournaments in the World Cup and the UEFA Championships down the stretch. So from a national team perspective, maybe you're going to miss a bit of that chemistry, a bit of that cohesiveness, because they all played similar styles when they were back in La Liga. But I think in some ways, especially for the younger players that are going abroad, that it could just make them that much more dangerous. So from a La Liga perspective, it's no surprise. You basically, at this point, I know the Spanish government is working on trying to correct this, but it will only be corrected as much as Florentino Perez and Sandro Rosell are willing, is you need to try and find a way to share the revenue that the league has as a league. For Barcelona and Real Madrid, all they have to do is just print out a third kit, and bam, there come millions of dollars into their coffers. No, none of the other teams can really do that. So from the aspects, the revenues that come into the league as a league, I think that you need to try and do something to the point where it's a little bit more balanced. If you take a look at the EPL, where you still have a dominant tier, and you still have a dominant team in Manchester United, you're talking about, I don't want to call it total revenue sharing, but there's revenue slotting to the point of how popular are you, how many fans do you bring in, what's the ratings, et cetera, but also coupled with where do you finish in the table. And so even lesser lights can climb up the table, make some money, and if they invest it well, stick around for a while and challenge for a European spot. In Spain, as you pointed out, it's pretty much the other championship that everyone's fighting for, and I don't think that that's healthy in the long run. I think that it was probably naive for many critics in Europe to say that you only had two good teams in Spain, in Barcelona and Real Madrid. I think in recent years, we've seen from Valencia and Atletico and Athletic and Sevilla that a lot of these other teams are very good. It's just they're not as good as Real and Barca, but to that point, who was? However, year after year of trying to operate on less money and selling away some of your best young players just to survive is going to pay a toll. And I think we're already starting to see that a bit. So something does need to happen, and it needs to happen relatively quickly. Otherwise, La Liga could be killing the goose and the golden egg.
How are Atletico going to do without Falcao this year? Are they still going to be able to challenge?
I think they will. I think that bringing David Villa in maybe even could be more dangerous. I mean, we're getting a little bit back more towards that Falcao, before Falcao, where you're looking at Diego Forlan, more of a slasher than a bruiser. Not to take anything away from Falcao, who's very good technically, but I think Villa fits in very well, and he's probably at that stage of his career where he still has another good year or two to give, and the fact that he will be relied upon, unlike he was at Barcelona, being an every-game player, I think that that will help, and they have a ton of talent and young talent. I think we started to see a lot of those players, like Koke, really start to find his feet underneath them last year. I think Arthur Turan in year two was light years better than he was in his debut year and probably even more comfortable. Who knows if they finally are able to close the deal to bring Diego back. So I think that at least offensively they're very good, and the fact that they were able to get Thibaut Courtois for another year between the pipes really helps shore up the defense. So I would not be surprised to see them challenging for a Champions League spot yet again, even with Falcao leaving.
So other than Atletico Madrid, who are the teams that are capable of possibly at least trying to push Real Madrid and Barcelona, and who will take those final Champions League spots? At the other side of it, who will be relegated? Can Elche, Villarreal, or Almeria stay up, or will those three teams go right back down?
I think Villarreal will probably stay up. It seems like they're smart in what they've been spending to this point. It's not quite the yellow submarine we remember from the Pellegrini days. But as far as Elche goes, I'd be really surprised. I know they've brought in some talent, but they're very limited. I think that would almost be the lock. As far as the other Champions League team, and this could be interesting. Last year we saw Real Sociedad pop up, and I think that they will be, again, in European contention, but they're going to be stretched a bit, and also losing their best young player isn't going to help. So how do they respond? Or will there be another dark horse, which is kind of what I'm leaning towards? And I don't know, maybe, and it's not saying you're taking a look at some of these teams via the lead. I mean, I'd change that. Rayo Vallecano, although they even let Leo Baptistao go. So there's so much turmoil, it's really hard to pick that fourth team. But in my mind, again, I see the Real, Barca, and Atletico almost locks for those top three. And then it's which team can pull the Sociedad and duplicate that. And at this point, there could be five or six teams that are battling for that.
Do you think Valencia is one of those teams?
I'd be surprised. Again, we still have some time left in the transfer window. I think also just the situations with their salaries over the past few years, what's going on with the new Mestalla, where it's on, it's off, it's on, it's off. I think that they need to get a lot of that stuff settled and to the point where they can then just focus on building up their youth development and making some opportune purchases here or there. They have good talent. In the midfield especially, and some pretty solid defenders as well. I think that last year they just got off to such a horrible start that it took a while to fight their way back. So it'll be interesting to find out if they're able to get there, but at this point I think it could be a season without Europe.
Perfect, perfect. Well, that's better analysis than we can ask for from anybody when it comes to La Liga. Phil Schoen from beIN Sport, thank you so much, and we look forward to listening to your coverage of La Liga, first of all starting with Barcelona against Thailand, and then all season long in La Liga. Thank you again so much for joining us, and we hope to have you on soon.
Anytime, Mark. It's been a blast, and it's always great to have a chance to talk with the fans. I mean, after all, I am a fan enough to the point where I realize what a great job I have, and basically get paid to watch these great players play this wonderful game. It's outstanding. So as much as the fans enjoy watching it, we enjoy bringing it.
Well, you heard it here first. Phil Schoen saying Real Madrid is going to win La Liga this year, despite the Neymar-Messi combo Barcelona. But for now, that's all the time we have on Kicking It with Rafael. We really hope you enjoyed the show, and feel free to send me a tweet at SoccerServer, that's soccer, and my last name, S-E-R-B-E-R, and let me know what you'd like to hear about or have us discuss on this show, and we will do our best to oblige. Until then, thanks for tuning in, and have a wonderful week.